人生是一本书，每一段时光都是一段难忘的故事。
就让我们在此刻分享我们的故事。欢迎收听西雅图中文广播美国故事栏目。
亲爱的听众朋友们，晚上好，欢迎收听西雅图中文电台美国故事栏目，我是小袁。今天我们非常有幸的请到华盛顿大学资深的教授，唐纳德·赫尔曼博士。赫尔曼博士呢是就是亚洲问题的亚洲政治的专家啊。那么我们非常欢迎赫尔曼博士参加我们的节目。
Today we are very honored to have Dr. Donald Hellman, a professor from University of Washington, to be with us in American Stories. Welcome, Dr. Hellman.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
因为赫尔曼博士因为比较低调，那么我们还是很需要向我们听众朋友首先呢简单的介绍一下他。那赫尔曼博士他是毕业于加州大学伯克利分校，那么之后呢获得了博士学位啊，就是政治学的博士学位。那么之后呢他在华盛顿大学的那个政治系还有国际关系学院就是担任那个系主任，然后呢也是教授。他的主攻方向是亚洲的政治，特别是日本的政治。那么他呢出版了好几本书，其中有三本书呢就是同时以英文跟日文出版的。那么他也跟那个很多智库包括布鲁金斯学会啊还有国会，就是美国的国会有一些广泛的联系，所以呢他也向他们提供他自己的那个见解啊。那么我们非常荣幸的请到赫尔曼博士。
First, I would like to give a brief introduction about Dr. Donald Hellman. Dr. Donald Hellman earned a PhD from University of California, Berkeley in 1964. He is a professor in the Department of Political Science and the Jackson Schools of International Studies. He is also the director of the Institute for International Policy. He is a specialist in Asian and international politics who devotes particular attention to the politics of Japan.He has written, co-written, and served as an editor of many books, three of which have been published in both Japanese and English editions. He has also been a frequent consultant to both government institutions, for example, Congress, the State Department, and public policy research organizations, for example, the Brookings Institution. So it is our great honor to have you here with us.
Thank you. It is my pleasure. I have been an extensive consultant on American policy toward Asia and international relations among Asian nations, and have written not only academic books, but books for the Rockefeller family, even been to the White House many times to advise them on Asian policy. So I have really two identities. One is an academic on Asia, and I've written many books about it, primarily on Japan, but I've also written about China, East Asia, Japan, and the international system.
他说的这个他也是很高兴来参加我们的节目。那他呢也就是长期以来啊为政府也是为一些机构提供广泛的这个关于东亚政治方面的政策咨询这样一个咨询的服务。那么他写的著作呢不仅有学术方面的著作，也还有一些关于白宫政治家生活家庭方面的著作。那么他的身份呢也是有两层，有一个学术身份，那么主要他的研究呢是是日本方面，那么同时呢他也研究他的学术领域呢也是涵盖了中国东亚以及国际间的政治关系这样一个方面。
赫曼博士，您是日本问题的专家，那么当初是您是为什么会进入到这个日本政治还有亚洲政治这些领域的？
So Dr. Hillman, as an expert in the politics of Japan, and we are wondering what brought you to the area of politics of Asia and Japan?
It began when I was an American soldier in Korea. When I graduated from college, I had fellowships to go to graduate school, but I was uncertain as to what I wanted to do. So I was drafted and sent to Asia, and I became very fascinated by Asia, its culture, and at that time. And then I went to Berkeley and spent my time studying not only Japan. I wanted to study Asia, or China, excuse me, but at that time, you had to learn classical Chinese before they would teach you modern Chinese. And having spent 2 years in the military, I said, no, I'm not. And I could not go to China. So I wound up studying Japan, but I have spent a lot of time visiting China and Korea and Southeast Asia as well.
他说他这个兴趣的开始呢，最初是始于他去朝鲜参军，做了一名战士。那么他大学毕业以后呢，他是获得了奖学金，可以继续读研究生。可是他那个时候不是很肯定这是否是他真心想做的事。然后呢，这个朝鲜战争爆发了，他就参军上了战场。那去了朝鲜以后呢，去了两年，他非常的就是迷恋亚洲文化，然后这种迷恋呢是他。从军队回来以后呢，就加入参加了，就是考入了伯克利大学，继续读研。那么他其实本来呢是想读中，是想做中国研究的。可是那个时候你必须研究，就是传统中国、古代中国，然后你才能研究现代中国。那么他说他已经在朝鲜生活了，就在韩国。就是那个朝鲜半岛生活了两年了，所以他也没有办法再住到中国去。于是呢，他就转而研究日本。但他其中呢，也是到中国去访问很多时间，有多次去拜访中国，对中国也是非常的有兴趣。
刚刚那个赫曼博士提到您参加过韩战啊，就是朝鲜战争。那么，能介绍？简单介绍一下有没有当时有没有什么危险，就是您在朝鲜战场上面。
So you just mentioned you've been involved in the war in Korea. So is there any experience you can share with us? As for example, do you have experienced some danger or what kind of stories you have in the field?
Well, I was in Korea shortly after the war, but I was stationed very close to the 38th parallel. And my impressions were, first of all, the horrors of war. I read about the Chinese involvement, and I was dumbfounded at how many people were killed. And we had, at that point, orphans living in caves and begging garbage from us while we were there, and told not to feed them because they would bring rats and disease. And the horrors of war, especially as it manifested in Korea, drove me to devote my life to promoting peace and understanding with Asia. I think that is my strongest memory of that incident. Thank you.
Okay. 他说呢，他是在朝鲜战争爆发以后不久到达的朝鲜。他的那个所在的地方呢，离三八线并不远，还是很近的。所以他看到很多人被杀，有一些孤儿呢，他们生活在山洞里啊，垃圾场里啊，就是生活条件非常恶劣。然后那时候呢，就是上面的指示就是说，不要去给他们这些孤儿食物，因为他们会带来疾病，会带来鼠疫。那么他在这个过程当中，他就目睹了战争的恐怖，所以他认为就是他这在这个战争当中给他最深刻的印象，反而是他对和平的渴望和对相互理解的这样沟通的需要的一种 付出，就是他很致力于这样的，就是希望的能和平和为互相沟通，来献出自己的努力。
那个赫曼博士，您就是个人经历也很传奇，然后我们知道您个人跟那个就是尼克松的国务卿叫亨利基辛格，然后日本现任的首相安倍晋三，然后都有交往，然后呢您也多次去过白宫，那么也应该认识一些美国的总统，那您能不能跟我们分享一下，就是您就是和他们打交道的就是经历，包括那个基辛格、安倍晋三还有美国的总统，谢谢。
You have had a legendary experience with meeting of meeting with the well-known politicians such as Henry Kissinger and the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Could you please share your experience with them to our audience? Thank you.
Yes. First, I was one of the first people in my generation to study and to learn an Asian language.And to write a book or two about the details, not only of Japanese politics, but Chinese politics as well. And I was asked, I received a grant from the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the establishment. And I was approached later to actually be on Henry Kissinger's staff.And I said I would not do it because he did not know anything about Asia. And most people are astonished to hear this. And then the last comment is, subsequently, later, I actually did write, meet with Kissinger and worked with his staff after his wife, Nancy Kissinger, was my boss at the Rockefeller family,Commission on Choices for Americans. And most people in Asia find it amazing that I refused to work with Kissinger initially, but I felt on my own experience that most people, including Mr. Kissinger, were very smart, but they knew very little about the workings of Asia.
Yeah, he said,他是他那一代人当中哈最早学习东亚的一门语言，并且写有这个专著。那么他写的那个最早一本或者两本专著，不仅是包括日本政治，也有包括中国的政治方面内容。那么他被授予一个职务，就是外交关系顾问这样一个职务。那这个也是当时就是说挺大的一个事务。那他呢也有机会就是。基辛格请他做员工，就是请基辛格请他工作，可是呢他拒绝了，因为他说他觉得基辛格不懂，所以呢赫尔曼博士就说我不为他工作，因为他不懂东亚。后来呢他还是跟基辛格一起写了书，也一起工作，这是因为这个基辛格的太太 Nancy 基辛格做了他的老板，做了赫尔曼博士的老板，因为他们一起为洛克菲勒家族的一个机构工作。那么当时呢，人们听到他竟然拒绝为基辛格工作，拒绝了这个工作，他就觉得非常的惊讶。那么他认为像基辛格还有其他一些人，他们也是非常的聪明的人，但是他们对东亚确实不了解。
那安倍晋三呢？
So what about Shinzo Abe?
Well, my relationship with Japan is interesting. I have three of my books have been translated into Japanese. And one of them became a bestseller because I was honest and critical of Japan.And in all of them. And interestingly, when I was writing one of these books, I did meet with an array of Japanese senior officials, including prime ministers. And then recently, I was given a decoration by the Emperor of Japan for my extensive research and promotion of understanding. But they said, we should have done this many years ago. And of course, the reason they did not is that I was critical of Japanese policy. But I do have, and I could maybe even show it to you, I received the award with a medal and Abe's stamp on it as the prime minister who had to approve this, and then the imperial stamp. So I have a very unusual relationship with the Japanese, who acknowledge that I have done extensive research and understanding and publication of them, but also that I maintain my independence of them. And I'll talk a little bit about China the same way, because please.
Okay. 他说他跟日本的关系呢是非常有趣的，他有三本书呢都被翻译成日语，其中一本呢还成为最畅销书籍，所以他那么他对日本呢是采这个评论呢其实非常诚实的，有些呢也还具有批评性。那他在写其中这三本书当中的一本的时候呢，他遇见了就是见到了很多日本高级很高级的领导人，那其中呢也有。 他还得到了天皇给他的一个荣誉奖章，因为他促进了美国和日本的相互理解，是把日本的东西呢介绍给世界，所以为了这种促进理解、互相理解呢，他得到了天皇给他的荣誉称号，那这个荣誉上面呢也有安倍的一个印章在那上面，所以呢他觉得这个非常有意思的是，日本呢可以就是承认他用这种方式认可他的贡献，认可他在广泛研究和促进 交流和理解方面所做出的贡献，同时他还可以保持自己研究和治学的这样一种独立性。那他说他对中国呢也有类似的经验，他可能一会儿会跟我们介绍。那个赫曼博士能跟我们分享一下您见到的美国总统吗？
Dr. Heyman, could you please share some experience that you met with the presidents in the United States?
Yes. I have met with several of them from both parties. American presidents are often very skillful politicians, but they know very little about international relations. Let me just describe two of them. I met with Gerald Ford when he was president in the 70s, and was even invited to the White House to attend the formal dinner honoring our 200th anniversary when they gave cherry trees or something to the United States. And Ford was very nice, but very limited in his understanding of international affairs. And therefore, Henry Kissinger, of course, was the key person defining this. And while he was very, very smart, it was not with a deep understanding of either Asia or of China. On the other hand, I was asked to be a premier consultant to President George H.W. Bush, who was head of the liaison office in China, was ambassador to the United Nations, was head of the Central Intelligence Agency, in addition to being a congressman. And he described to me privately his reaction to China. He liked China, but he said it was a different world, which he did not really fully understand, and asked me to explain more fully to him what was going on there. I told him that he said, if you do a good job, you will get a big job in Washington. And I said, I don't want a big job in Washington. I'm very happy where I am. I am interested in what we are going to do after the Cold War. What are we going to do? We will win the Cold War. I had been to Soviet Union many times as exchanges as agent. And he said, I am not interested in that. I want to be president. And so he became president when the Cold War ended. And then he said, I have trouble with the vision thing, when we needed a vision more than anything else. Let me stop.
OK, 他说呢，他见过好几任的美国总统，两个党派的都有。那么在70年代呢，他就发现呢，他美国总统大部分是有这样一个特点，他们有很高的就是技巧，就是政治家的这样的技巧。可是呢，对东方世界了解知之甚少。那他就举了两个例子，就是说一个呢是70年代的福特总统。那么当时呢，他被邀请到白宫去参加一个很正式的晚宴，那是美国好像200周年的一个纪念日，所以呢有樱桃树啊什么都是很正式的一个白宫晚宴。他说福特总统呢是个好人呢、啊，是个 nice 的人，但是呢他对国际关系确实了解不多。就同样呢，那基辛格当时基辛格也是这样，他很聪明，可是呢对东亚和中国是不非常的不够了解。那还有一个例子呢，就是 George H.W. 布什，就是布什总统，他同时在当时呢，他还是个国会议员，还有一些那个反正他有各个好几个职务在那里。那么布什总统私下里就跟赫尔曼博士说，他说他很喜欢中国，可是那是一个完全不同的世界，他不理解。哎，他就布什那就请赫尔曼博士呢给他介绍一下那样一个东方世界到底是怎么样。那么赫尔曼博士就告诉他，你如果在进了白宫呢，你可以干一番大事业，因为冷战结束以后你应该干一番大事业。那布什就问他，哎，什么大事业？我们会一定会赢得冷战的，也会赢的。然后冷战以后呢，就这个布什总统呢，他又说，就是赫尔曼博士呢建议他建立一种新的国际合作的关系，可是布什总统呢表示他不太感兴趣，他说我对一切需要有远见的问题呢都有困难。所以呢这个赫尔曼博士就跟我们介绍了福特和布什，这样当时有这样的情况。
This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
现在是美国西部时间晚上10点整，这里是西雅图中文电台。
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Chinese Radio Seattle.
声声有情。
1150 AM 西雅图中文电台，
这里是您的信息中心，
这里是您的心灵港湾，
这里是您的精神家园，
西雅图华人自己的中文电台。
朋友们也可以在网上收听我们的节目，收听网址是 ChineseRadioSeattle.com，
也可以通过智能手机下载 Chinese Radio Seattle 或者西雅图中文电台 APP 来收听我们的节目。
我们的高清调频频道是 FM98.9 Channel 3，
我们的微信平台、新浪微博和 Facebook 账号都是 Chinese Radio Seattle。
各位亲爱的听众朋友们，大家好，我是西雅图中文电台的主持人陈香。来电台快4年了，4年里我主持了西雅图不眠夜、读书观影，还有心灵港湾。除此之外，我还荣幸地担任了电台小主持人班的教师之一。如今电台8岁，我很开心能够参与他近一半的成长，也深深地体会到电台一路走来是多么的不容易。感谢电台给了我那么多美好的时光，衷心希望亲爱的中文电台未来越做越好，也希望听众朋友们多多支持我们西雅图中文电台，谢谢。
热烈祝贺，
热烈祝贺，
热烈祝贺
西雅图中文地带，
西雅图中文电台，
西雅图中文地带，
西雅图中文地带，
西雅图中文电台，
西雅图中文电台
开播8周年。
截止日马上就要到了，时间紧迫，这是您填写2020年人口普查的最后倒数。 我的意思是，这是未来十年内的最后机会。您可能已经听说过人口普查如何帮助我们满足社区需求，用于学校、道路和医疗设施的公共资金，以及您在政府中的代表都依赖于人口普查。如果您还没有填写人口普查，请立即进行，简单快捷，在线，通过电话或邮件。各位，不要只是坐在那儿听广播，边听广播边填写2020年人口普查吧，塑造您的未来，从这里开始，现在开始。
So any other presidents?
Well, actually, one of the more interesting comments would be about the Japanese leaders. Mr. Abe, because you asked me and I did not really fully answer. Mr. Abe is from a family of Japanese political elite.And his connections go back to Kishi Nobusuke and so on. And he is remarkable in that he is a clever politician, very smart, but he really is an old-fashioned Japanese nationalist. And he's part of a group of people thatamazingly persist at the head of Japanese politics, despite the fact that the World War II ended many, many years ago. Second point would be a man named Kono Toru. Kono Toru is now the Japanese defense minister. And before that, he was the foreign minister.And he, I know him quite well. You better translate. I want to talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you. 他说他有一个其实比较有趣的一段交往呢，是和日本领导人之间的。那么，安倍首相呢，他认为他是就是说，是有非常突出的聪明的，是非常有突出才华的一个聪明的政治家。但是呢，安倍是一个传统的比较老派的这个日本政治家，他会非常的坚持日本的一些比较传统的政策。尽管呢，日本现在离二次大战结束已经过去了非常很多年了，就是二次大战二战已经结束很多年，但是安倍一些政策还是非常老派。
Mr. Kono is quite different. He also comes from the Japanese political elite. His father was foreign minister. His grandfather was the most powerful politician in the 1950s when they negotiated peace agreement with the Soviet Union. And he visited Seattle and the University of Washington and came to my office and we said polite things. And finally I said to him,I bet I know more about your grandfather, both personally and professionally, than you do. And he thought I was crazy. And then he gave his speech, and he came up and asked me for a copy of the translation of my first book. He subsequently sent me an email, or actually a postcard, saying,You do know more about my grandfather than I do. And when you're next in Tokyo, I want to talk to you about Japanese politics. And of course, you don't walk in and talk to the foreign minister or anyone. But he was taken, he graduated from Georgetown University in the United States. His English is remarkable.And he is anti-nuclear, which is really interesting. And he is the one who nominated me for an award from the Japanese emperor because he thought I really was a student of Japan, even though I was critical of a lot of it. He is now the defense minister, which is amazing to me since he was quite critical. But I mention this because his attitude toward the world and toward not only the United States, but China as well, is much more open than Abe's was. He is an interesting globalist. He understands Western culture as well as Japanese and Asian culture. And he wrote a letter of nomination for me for my award, which he didn't need to do. I didn't really know him, but he was honest. But anyway, that is a positive aspect of Japan.
Okay, thank you. So 他还要提到日本的一个精英政治精英人物，日本政府的一个现在的一个政治精英人物叫 Kola。那么他这个人的父亲呢，以前是日本的外交大臣。那么他的祖父呢，也是20世纪50年代日本政府最有影响力的政治家之一。他当时也是参与了跟苏联签订那个战后协议的部分。那这个 Kola 呢，他到西雅图来。就是来过西雅图，然后他们也有一些非常客气礼貌的见面。那么他当时呢就跟这个日本政治家说，他说我对你祖父的了解，无论是个人方面还是关于他的政治生涯，我都比你了解的多。那当时他是非常不相信，可是后来呢，他去把他的第一本，就是赫尔曼博士第一本日文书翻译成日语的书啊，就是拷贝下来去读过以后，然后他心悦诚服的就对克尔曼博士说，哎，你真的了解我的祖父比我还要多得多，下次您再来东京，我要跟你好好聊聊关于日本的外交政策方面的问题。那这个人呢是非常有趣，他是英语非常好，是乔治大学，就美国的乔治大学毕业的，然后他的观点，他是反对核武器，反核的一个人物，那这个是挺有意思的。那当时呢，尽管赫尔曼博士的一些书呢，都有对日本政策方面提出一些批评的意见，但是这个人呢，还是向天皇提名，他获得那个天皇颁予的奖章，他是提名。所以呢，他觉得这个人呢，对中国以及对世界，他的政见啊，都是非常开放，要比安倍晋三这个政策呢，要开放的多。他也是比非常了解这个整个的东亚关系和美国和世界，也是这样一个很有意思的人物。
那个赫曼博士，您访问过多次访问过中国了，那您能不能分享一下您访问中国的那个经历，然后就是您感受到中国的变化，能不能跟我们分享一下？
Dr. Hibben, you have visited China multiple times. So could you please share your experience of visiting China and your feelings of seeing Chinese progresses or changes?
Yes. I first visited China around 1980 when Deng Xiaoping said it's all right to be rich. And I have visited Moscow many times, and the striking contrast was in Beijing and Shanghai in those days. You could not walk down the street because everybody was trying to sell you something, or their sense of entrepreneurship. And of course, I enjoy Chinese people. They have a sense of humor. Their food is probably the best in the world. I just had a good lunch here too, a Chinese lunch. and therefore, you know, of course, Chinese culture is overwhelmingly rich. The most interesting impression I have is really happened last year. I visited China three times, all as their guest. The first invitation was in January. It came from the Chinese Academy of Sciences. The director, Professor Liu, had read what I had written about Japanese foreign policy in Asia. And quite frankly, BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative, is really copying what the Japanese did when in the 70s and 80s, when they had large foreign exchange reserves. They insisted on building infrastructure, and they insisted on using Japanese, not people in the countries. And this is really the heart of BRI, and that's why they invited me. I usually met with the foreign ministry, or I usually met with, you know, a think tank or an institute or something. But this was very interesting. And of course, yeah, I mean, Beijing by now is unrecognizable. I mean, I could not. The changes are remarkable. And let me stop there, because I'm going to talk a little bit more about what happened there and my experience with the huge number of Chinese students that come to the University of Washington and are in my classes.
他说他第一次去中国呢是在上个世纪80年代，那时候呢邓小平的政策就是允许一部分人先富起来，那么他去走在马路上呢他就没有办法走，因为他发现很多人，那个时候很多人都会就硬卖给你东西，很多小商贩来给外国人推销东西，然后他跟企业家见面，他觉得中餐呢是非常好吃，当然他知道中国文化呢非常的博大精深。那么有意思的是呢，他去年一年就去了三次中国，而且都是被邀请去中国的。那一月份的时候呢，他是被中科院去邀请，一位主管邀请他，那个时候他正在写日本外交政策这个书。那去干什么呢？就去讨论这个一带一路这个政策这个问题。那么他发现有趣的是呢，一带一路这个政策呢，正是好像是复制了日本70年代的一个政策。那时候日本七十年代日本人这个外交政策也是就是在就是类似于一带一路一样，在别的国家就推行基础设施，通过基础设施的建设，然后呢，这个不是要用日本人去做工作，而不是在当地国家就是他们做基础设施建设的去用他们当地的本国人，而是呢派日本人去工作。那这个呢和中国现在一带一路非常相似。那他一般呢到中国去访问都是一些学术机构啊什么，那这次有中科院有这样一个访问呢，他觉得很有意思。那他走在北京呢，发现对变化非常的巨大，他都认不出来了。那他还有一些就是故事呢一会儿跟我们讲，但他现在在华盛顿大学的学生当中很多都是从中国来的学生。
Short comment and a longer one, but my longer comment is what my discussion was in China. I was surprised that I was invited by the Academy of Sciences to appraise the BRI, because I was not a China specialist in the explicit word, although I had written and edited books about it, about Chinese foreign policy. But they thought my criticism of the Japanese, what they called official development assistance, was really what BRI is. It is using $1 trillion worth of foreign exchange reserves to build infrastructure in other countries. And my comment, there were two comments I made that they really reacted to. One was, you want to spend in American money, $1 trillion or $2 trillion, so that by 2050, you will control Asia and the world. And my question was, do you really know what the world will be like in 2050? We are in the midst of a digital revolution, and the old industrial revolution created nationalism, communism, socialism, imperialism. All of the isms were derivative from the impact of industrialization. And China was humiliated because it happened primarily in this island called United Kingdom, and they did not have gunboats. And I said, if you're going to spend that much money, don't you think you should figure out how the world might change in a globalized digital age. And they were shaken. In fact, Xi Jinping almost made a statement excerpting from a paper I wrote saying, yeah, we have to have meetings every 4 years to figure it out. Go ahead.
他说他先做一个短的评论哈，他还是非常自己惊讶于自己受到了被中科院邀请去参加这个表扬一带一路的这样的一个会议，因为他也不是研究中国问题的主要这个专家，他也不是一个中国人，他会受到中科院的邀请去参加这样的会议。但是呢，中国人可能是认为，因为他对日本这个外交政策这样一个批评呢，使得他引起了中国方面的这个注意，因为他们觉得哎，这两个是一回事情，有很近似的地方。那么都是在其他国家进行基础设施建设，进行投资这样。那么他有两个评论呢，是引起了当时中国的这些学者或者领导人的巨大的反应的。那么一个呢，就是说，他说你要花美元，花那个2500 trillion的美元，是不是？这个数字我可能有点记不清，就是花一笔巨大的美元，希望在2050年的时候能够领导世界。那么他说，现在在这个数字革命的这样一个时代，那你要花这么多钱领导世界，那你是不是至少应该想一想你可以预见到世界会怎样变化吗？到2050年这个世界会成为一个怎样的世界呢？他就是提出了这样一个问题。因为在工业革命以后啊，出现了许多的主义，比方说帝国主义、共产主义、社会主义等等，那这个发生了翻天覆地变化。那么数字革命以后，2050年这个世界将会是什么样子的呢？他认为我们至少应该在花这笔钱之前，至少应该有这样的把握去了解这个未来的发展。OK。
我们，因为我们也是借这个机会，就是向亚洲问题专家那个赫尔曼博士请教一些中美之间关系的问题啊，就是中美的关系现在是低谷，然后呢，就是赫尔曼博士，您觉得现在美国跟中国之间的关系是不是比冷战时候美国跟苏联之间的关系还要差？
We would really like to use this opportunity to learn from you, an expert of Asian studies. Recently, U.S. and China sign on a U.S. relationship has become, in the valley is irreversibly worse. So, do you think the current Sino-U.S.relation is worse than the Soviet Union, a Soviet-U.S. relation during the Cold War?
It's very, very different. And people who say a new Cold War is developing really should look more carefully at history. The Cold War did have ideological roots, capitalism, democratic capitalism versus communism and command economies. But the real Cold War was both the Soviet Union and the United States could blow the world up many times. And therefore, the future is not going to be a Cold War. The Cold War, the future is going to be more competition on technological innovation in a digital and otherwise world, not a capacity to blow up each other completely. Indeed, strategic nuclear war is unwinnable, and people know that. It's called mutual assured destruction is what we called it. And therefore, concentrating on a war which is driven by these weapons that would destroy everything is not feasible. Competition in the future will be, of course, there will be conventional fighting and things like that, but it's going to be this big World War I, World War II, because that no one can win. Violent conflict. So therefore, using the phrase, comparing the future to the Cold War is a mistake. The future competition will be different. Now, well, you can translate that, please.
OK， 他说现在这个跟中美的关系和当时中美苏的这样一种冷战是有非常的不同。他说我们如果要提到新冷战这个 说法的时候，我们要当心一点，要清醒的去先看历史。他说冷战纵固然就是美苏之间的冷战固然有意识形态差异不同这样一个根源，但是呢还有一个原因就是他们两个力量可以就是毁掉这个地球就是很好多遍，但是未来的竞争就是未来的这种一种所谓的新冷战关系呢是一种竞争关系，它不是谁把谁给彻底毁掉，这是不可能的。那么竞争呢当然有包括发明啊有创造力啊，但是如果是像以前传统这样一种冷战那不会有真正的赢家，所以我们用冷战这个术语的时候呢是不恰当的，不应该说是一种新冷是冷战这样的一个术语。
各位亲爱的听众朋友，西雅图中文电台需要您的支持。
如果您成为我们西雅图中文电台的会员，您将获得中文电台的包括茶杯、 T 恤衫等纪念品。
您也有机会获得西雅图中文电台一年一度的春节晚会、台庆晚会的免费门票，以及免费在西雅图中文电台做广告等。当然还有更多餐馆就餐、参加活动等打折机会。
加入西雅图中文电台的会员，您就和来自全世界的众多会员一起成为西雅图中文电台这个大家庭的一员，帮助西雅图中文电台的电波在空中更久的飘扬。
请拨打会员热线电话206-619-8698，206-619-8698，或者访问中文电台网站 chineseradio.seattle.com/membership。
Crossings TV、Comcast 有线电视、Xfinity 152台，为西雅图华人观众送上豪华中文电视节目大餐：东方新闻、凤凰卫视新闻、非诚勿扰、一站到底、芝麻开门。每天还有精彩电视剧和更多资讯和娱乐节目，请记得收看 Crossings TV、 Comcast 有线电视、 Xfinity 152台。查询详细节目信息请访问 www.crossingstv.com。
Now to answer specifically the current problems in bilateral relations, first of all, the mood, anti-China mood is bigger than Trump. I mean, TrumpIn my opinion, is hopeless in terms of developing a strategy or anything else. And he has done, he thinks he's going to lose, and he's flailing and doing very stupid things. But what's amazing to me is even the so-called liberal Democrats in America have been running articles critical of China. The New York Times, for example, they almost run nothing but something is wrong in China.And I think that's a mood, which, of course, Trump is trying to capitalize on in a bilateral way, which is just sad. I don't know what to say about it. It displays, in part, I think, two things. One is the American establishment is kind of worried that China is going to be, as it will be, the biggest economy in the world, and that...They do have a strategy. Xi Jinping is, whether you agree or disagree with BRI, it is a coherent strategy creating international institutions like the Asian Investment Infrastructure Bank and so on. And the United States is drifting. And it's not, wasn't just Trump. It goes back to Obama and Bush. Now,That's sad. And what's happening now is that American politics is so deeply partisan and broken that it's a mistake. It's sad that China has become, I don't know if you can translate a piñata, what Latin Americans have this...thing they beat all the
pinata.
And China has become a pinata in American politics. And that's really sad. What should be done is we have shared interests. China is not going to give up its civilization, as one of Trump's advisors from the State Department said, there's different civilization, we're going to have to change it. That's silly. And she was a director of the policy planning. China will be China.And obviously, and we will be American, but we have shared interests in global warming, in, believe it or not, the Verona crisis, the Verona virus, the new really controlling the digital revolution itself. Of course we're going to be competitive, of course, but we're not going to, we don't have to make this into something like a Cold War. I mean, everybody's competitive and in one way or another, both within the country and without. So my answer is, to the specifics, I think it's soluble, but we're in for a very difficult time right now. And I'm very, one reason I'm devoting my declining years to try to promote exchanges of students on a regular basis and between China and the United States, because I think the two countries will be the dominant players in the international system. And if they don't find ways to cooperate, to work together, it's going to be a very exciting world, unfortunately, for particularly the translators generation, your generation. I won't be around to see it, but it we should change. But it's soluble. It's soluble. And I think I don't understand the anti-China mood in this country as it's developed. My final comment is, I think part of it is that our establishment sees China as a potential rival, and people, once they have power, don't like to see someone else challenge them. What's that?
他说呢，现在这个中美的双边关系啊，也是一个很重要的问题。那么现在美国有这样一个反对中国的个反中运动，这其实是一个大趋势，不只是 Trump 这一届政府的问题。那对于 Trump 来说呢，他认为这个政府，这个他本人呢，已经就是说没有就基本上已经绝望了，没有办法了这样一个状态。那就算是自由的一些民主党的党派媒体呢，似乎也不关于报道中国的事情，除了报道中国的错误以外呢，说中国不好缺点的以外，就没有什么关于中国的事情了。所以呢，他就是这个原因呢，因为其实根本上美国还是担心中国作为一个崛起的大经济体，这样一个未来会超越美国，甚至取代美国，有这样全球的领导力。那这个里面其实也有中国自己原因，比方说习近平是一个这样的竞争政策政治对手，他的一些战略也引起了美国人有这样的担忧等等。那么现在美国国内呢，就是有个非常严重的党派分裂，政治问题很严重。那中国就好像是他们的一个 panada， 就是一个互相可以就是说去打的这个目标。 panada 呢是墨西哥文化当中一个大家用棒子所有的人去打，打了以后就有糖掉下来，那么就是打了中国呢，双方就都有好处，所以变成共同攻击的这样一个，中国变成共同攻击这样一个对象。那么其实呢他就觉得我们跟就是美国跟中国应该是还是有共同的利益的，比方说在全球变暖，甚至这一次的新冠病毒这个事情上，我们是有可以有共同利益进行合作的。那么至于数字革命时代，我们中国和美国当然会是竞争对手，就是可以竞争，但是不需要冷战。所以他就希望能够有更多的中美的留学生啊交换项目，因为他觉得这两个国家需要交流，虽然是对手，竞争对手，但是需要交流。但现在令人比较伤心的呢，他就是觉得他不太理解把中国当成这样一种所谓就是叫新冷战啊什么，他认为是没有必要的。那其实美国还是把中国当成一个潜在的对手，就是你已经是第一老大的，你不希望别人对你的位置呢形成威胁，所以才会有这样一些中美政策的现象出来。
那个您赫文教授，您那个能不能预测一下今年美国大选，就是如果 Trump 他连任的话，中美关系是不是会更差？如果 Biden 就是能够当选总统的话，中美关系是不是会比现在好？
Can you predict the directions of bilateral relations after the general election on November the 3rd? If Trump gets re-elected, would it be better, the relationship would be better or worse? Or what if Biden is elected as the next president of the United States?
Well, Trump, of course, will change. If he wins, which I don't think will happen, but it might, he will not be quite as crazy as he is now. He will change because the trade between the United States and China, particularly agricultural, is very important politically. But he does not have strong opinions about anything, except if he really continues to bash China and calls the flu the Kung flu or whatever else and insults, then I worry. Biden, on the other hand, he's a very decent, nice guy. He's not dynamic. His vice president is. And what Trump says, that if Biden wins, everybody will have to study Chinese. Now, that may be good for your program or your station if everybody has to learn, but that's not going to happen. He is a nationalist, but he, like many people in America from the establishment, and I'm part of that, I must admit, although on the outside of it, they do not have a deep understanding of Asia. And the pressures on coming from maybe business, although all of the big businesses, certainly in Seattle and elsewhere, are global. They do make most of their money abroad. Certainly they get most of their revenue. So that's not much of a choice. And I think Biden would go along with that. I think part of the problem of China is they are being blamed for the cost of the virus. And people are, we're going to have a rather serious breakdown economically here for smaller industries. And we also are going to have that because we're becoming digital. And in a digital revolution, things are going to change. And that's not as new with China. China's going to be changing as well because of the digital revolution. So I would think Biden will be more benign. He's not going to insult or anything. Whether he will wind up reversing the anti-China mood or not, it's hard for me to say, because I don't really understand why the New York Times and others are anti-Chinese, other than they see us in decline and there's and China rising.
他说呢，他不认为啊，特朗普可能会连任。当然呢，特朗普也是有可能会连任的。但是他认为，如果特朗普连任了以后呢，他不会像现在这样的，好像就是说失控了，疯狂。特朗普也会发生改变，因为在贸易，尤其是农业方面呢，他必须与中国达成一定的合作，因为这个也是非常对他来说也是非常重要的。那他认为特朗普呢？就是没有对任何事有自己强烈的观点，所以呢，他是可以变。那他还提到，特朗普呢确实是一个民族主义者，那他也就像美国建国初期以来一直到现在打很多的政客，对东亚文化是没有特别深刻的理解的。那只要他不要有侮辱中国的话语，比方说一些中国病毒啊，什么功夫什么病毒啊，就是有侮辱中国的话语出来呢，他也不是会太担心。就说，那么如果拜登呢，他就提到拜登是一位非常体面、非常 nice 的这样非常好的人，这非常体面、得体的人。那么现在的这个事实是呢，就是说很多人，比方说在西雅图地方，很多企业都是在全球贸易当中赚钱，很多钱、很多利润都是从国外获得的。那这样一种这个全球贸易这个关系，这是没有办法去改变它的。那么他认为拜登当选以后，他一定会顺应这种变化，给中小企业有带来发展的空间。那他认为在数字革命的现在呢，事情是会变的，这个世界在改变，中国也会改变。但是他不确定，就是如果拜登当选，拜登会不会扭转这种反中的潮流？
因为他这个倒是不确定，因为他从一开始就不理解这个政策为什么要，就是现在为什么一定要反中，那么中国人反而认为美国在衰落，中国在崛起，他也不是很能够有确信，有断言那个拜登当选以后是否会扭转这个一种政策的一个方向。
那我们还要请教一下赫曼博士，就是您有没有一些建议，就是对我们在美国的华人，就是怎么样在美国生存？因为现在在中美关系恶化的情况下，就是很多有仇恨亚裔的一些情绪啊，然后那么在这种情况下，就是您希望我们就是在美的华人应该怎么做才能够在美国能够就是生存得更好。
So Dr. Helbert, do you have any suggestions for Chinese Americans who live in the US? Because in the situation now when the two countries relationship is worsened, in a lot of Asian Chinese Americans receive some hostile or anger toward us. So what's your suggestion for us to live here?
That's a difficult question. I guess answer it in two ways. I mean, one is that I've had many Chinese students in my classes, and when the virus hit, their parents got PPE and sent it over to the University of Washington Hospital because their students, whom they wanted home, of course, said that they should do this. And it's really remarkable that they were as generous that they would buy, you know, they were limited to the amount of PPE they could buy, but they bought the maximum amount and just gave it. That act of generosity when, you know, students are uncomfortable, the parents don't know what to do, they want their children back. And in other words, humanize this. I mean, I've talked about this, but get it out of the level where the president of the United States calls China names and insults them and picks them as the cause of all of his problems and so on. I think greater communication and how you do that is difficult because obviously whatever we do, particularly if Trump is insulting and trying to send the students home and everything, Xi Jinping has got to respond. He can't, you know, you start insulting and doing things. That's one thing. What they should do about this, I feel very sorry for them. I think they should get, they are trying to get some publicity, but I think having your station is a good example of trying to get greater exposure to a group of people that are much more sympathetic and have perspective. Not so much that they're just pro-Chinese, but they put China in perspective. China is doing an excellent job on dealing with the virus, for example. And the generosity, you know, and the information that 370,000 Chinese students that were here every year for the last 6 or 7 years is remarkable. They're going to shape the future of China, apart from, and the world, I might add, no matter what Xi Jinping or his successors may do, because this is unfolding over time. But in terms of addressing the immediate insults, I think that is really difficult. I mean, I find this, I can analogize when Japan was seen as a threat in the late 80s, replacing the Soviet Union, Japanese were killed by American, anti-Japanese feeling. They had an automobile in Detroit where you paid a dollar to smash it with a hammer. And similarly, and that is very similar to what's happening now with the Chinese. And how you deal with that, I mean, obviously Trump getting rid of him would be good, but it's a real problem. I'd like to think about that because I'm very embarrassed by the inadequacy of my answer to it, because I am sympathetic and I don't know how, if I were the Chinese being so abused, as it were, I would ask that question of someone else and probably get the same ambiguous answers. I'll stop there.
Thank you.
他说这对他来说是一个很困难的问题，他也从两个方面吧来考虑。那首先呢，他有很多学生，就是华大他的学生当中有很多学生在这次病毒期间呢就是留在了美国，那他们的父母呢就从中国寄过来很多 PPE， 就是那些个人的防护用品，寄到华大，给华大的医院。那这个举动啊非常了不起，这些中国的学生的家人们非常的慷慨，就是也受到了这个行为呢，也是得到了他的赞赏的、尊重的。那么，因为现在中国人在美国就遭遇的这样一种对待呢，又很大，是因为总统这个特朗普总统他用了一些侮辱性的话语，来说中国和中国的学生是要把中国学生遣送回家等等，那这也是导致了问题的恶化。那他认为还是需要扩大沟通和交流，因为当美国总统去侮辱中国人的话，那么作为习近平他也是要有一定要有回应的。那他觉得这个很遗憾，那他说还是要多一些像我们西雅图中文电台这样的是一个很好的例子，因为我们也是一个平台，我们会邀请更多有同情心的人，倒也不一定要是完全支持中国，而是只要能够从中国的角度出发来考虑事情，处理问题，那么要像就是作为这样的平台来提供大家一个交流的一个地方。那他说呢，在中国过去那么在那么多年过去呢，六七年了，中国有非常多的学生来到了美国，那么他们也会形成就是美国人对中国的这种印象，所以这个美国人对中国印象呢也是慢慢的呈现出来，通过这些中国留学生啊什么的。那他想到一个有类似的有类比的例子，就是在80年代晚期的时候呢，日本就是在美国的日本人也是遭受了非常不好的待遇，甚至被杀掉，什么在底特律那个就是有人去砸日本人的汽车啊等等。那现在中国人的处境可能和当时的日本人美国的日本人非常相似。那怎么解决这个问题呢？他自己也很遗憾，他当然非常同情中国人的遭遇。他说特朗普不当总统呢会是一个好的解决，就是会有帮助，就是会是好的解决方法。可是具体怎么做呢，他也觉得很抱歉，因为他也不知道，因为如果他想象一下，如果自己受到这样的侮辱，他还能会有什么方案能够提出来建议自己的同胞呢？
好，我们今天因为时间的原因啊，非常荣幸的请到那个华盛顿大学国际关系学院以及政治系的那个就是教授也是前系主任啊，就是唐纳德·赫尔曼博士参加我们西雅图中文电台美国故事节目的专访。那么在节目的最后，赫尔曼博士是不是再跟我们听众朋友说一句话？
So time is almost up. We are so happy that we can have you to be with us today. At the end of the show, could you please just say one line to the Chinese audience?
Right. Say goodbye to them. It's been my pleasure to be on this program, which was a surprise to me because I hope I gave you a perspective on the United States and Japan and the story of how I got involved in Asia. And I am delighted I had this opportunity, and I wish everyone well in China, and I hope to be back there soon, especially to eat a lot of food in good restaurants. Thank you very much.
谢谢 ，Thank you。他说他非常荣幸，也非常惊喜接受我们的采访。那么他希望今天的节目呢，给我们的一个思考的角度，关于日本、关于美国，也关于他个人与东亚的这个关系。他希望能够这个疫情管早点过去，我们能够他能够早点回到中国去吃好吃的东西，去见朋友。再次感谢中文电台。